Good. So you guys have to really give him a hard time then today. Ask some really hard questions.
Always.
Okay, I'm just going to give it another 30 seconds or so. All right. Well, welcome everyone to Grad 592. It's good to see all of you here. Welcome to those who are joining us, not as students, but as just listen in and ask questions. The students are reminded that they need to keep their cameras on, please. That helps the interaction with the speaker. So it's good to see you all last week in person. I really appreciated, and Julie appreciated, the comments and the feedback on the video that you saw. I sent out in an email last week with her contact information. If you thought about it and had some more thoughts, please feel free to send your comments on to her. So I'm really looking forward to today. The term one water has been around for a while. It's not been well defined, but it's kind of like we know what we're talking about with respect to it. And I'm pleased to say that we have on the CSU campus a whole center that is centered around one water sustainability, essentially. So let me introduce Mazdak Arabi, who is a civil and environmental engineer professor and also the Borland Chair of Water Resources at Colorado State University. He's the founder and serves as the director of the One Water Solutions Institute. His research is focused mostly on development of decision support systems for management of water resources at a watershed scale. Mazdak, thank you so much for being here with us. I do owe him an apology. The first posters that went out misspelled his name. For some reason, we put an S instead of a Z, but we fixed that now. And with that, Mazdak, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Jennifer. My brother-in-law still spells my name Nasdaq, like so no worries about misspelling my name.
Okay.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Jennifer, for inviting me to give this lecture, and thank you to Water Center and Nancy and the help students that have facilitated this lecture. As Jennifer mentioned, the concept of one water, although we've been talking about it for a while now, over the past couple of decades. But it's a topic that it's complex, requires a deep understanding of the nuances of water management and the broader interaction between water and other factors that influence our livelihoods. So as I go through these slides, please feel free to stop me, ask questions, and interact with me. As long as we have time to have a conversation, I don't mind to answer any questions as we go forward. And again, as I mentioned, I'm delighted to see a couple of familiar faces in the student groups that hopefully would interact as well. So, obviously, in the context of water management, it's really important to understand that water is really essential for everything that we do in our cities and communities and in all places. Our cities and communities all have a long and intimate relationship with water. These places are often located around water features, whether they're coastal regions or lakes or water courses. And these places are centers of our communities, both for trades and economic activities, but also for recreation and many other aspects of our livelihoods. So therefore, the ability to access to safe and clean drinking water is essential, not only for human health and our survival, but also for economic growth and also beautification of our places. Urban water systems in particular built on massive infrastructure systems that have been put in place over the course of many, many centuries. Initially you can think historically from drinking water systems, reservoirs, dams, aqueducts, and canals that allow moving water from different places to urban centers. And then obviously drinking water supply facilities and treatment facilities. In the beginning of 20th century and, you know, up to mid-20th century, many wastewater treatment facilities were put in place to facilitate treatment of the waste that is produced by cities in water and prevent waterborne diseases. And we've achieved tremendous progress in that regard. And over the course of past several decades, maybe two or three decades, stormwater management and stormwater infrastructure systems have also been put in place, at least in developed countries, and increasingly are embedded in cities throughout the world. Although these massive infrastructure systems are essential for enabling economic activities in cities, they tend to be operated in silos. Not only we have these systems that consume, again, massive amount of energy and resources, but also they are managed by a very complex set of institutions that operate in silos. So typically the modern cities exemplify this linear take, make, waste paradigm. We extract water, use it for various economic and other type of activities in our cities, and then return the waste to our surface water or other water bodies that are influenced by the type of activities that we do in our cities. And it's really important to understand that these systems have kept our cities going. Many of these facilities and operations have made our cities cleaner and better, but we're at a point that the massive the tremendous amount of land use change and urbanization and population growth has put a lot of pressure on the natural capital of our cities. Again, it's really important to understand that historically we've achieved a lot of progress by providing drinking water services, wastewater services, and stormwater control. But these services now are being undermined because of the twin effects of urbanization and population growth. And then they are exacerbated by changes in climate, extreme events, and events that we are experiencing throughout the world, whether they are extreme flooding or extended droughts that we are experiencing in areas such as the American West. And our resources are limited, and we are demanding increasingly higher amounts of services from our drinking water, wastewater, and stormwater services. And this has put our cities in a situation where our infrastructure systems are at a tremendous or under tremendous pressures and almost at a breaking point. So when we think about water challenges, not only in cities, but at the river basin scale, aging infrastructure that often tend to be inadequate is a significant problem. Many of you are familiar with the problems in Flint, Michigan, and in many other regions throughout the world that aging infrastructure is a cause of significant or has caused significant problems for communities. Water affordability obviously is an issue. Right now in the United States, probably affordability of water and wastewater services is not a big issue, but it's becoming a more and more of a challenge because, again, we have more limited resources and the supply-demand conditions are changing that could influence affordability of water services. We have this issue of fragmentation of water systems, particularly for smaller water systems where their operations and compliance with regulations may cause, again, elevated levels of expenditure. Water quality is obviously a challenge. We know from evidences in the Chesapeake Bay region, from Mississippi River Basin, and even in Colorado, for example, in many of our lakes, we have eutrophication issues that cause ecosystem degradation. And the past decade has been replete with flooding events and other type of climatic extremes, including droughts, that we all are aware of. And another challenge that is often referred to is public acceptance, participation, and literacy. Water is so essential for life and has been the focus of many, many planning and management issues that everybody takes it for granted. Everybody thinks that as we turn the faucet, there will be clean water that we can access. But again, because of the changes in our systems, we are at a point that public awareness and literacy about water issues and water challenges is critical to build new systems of water infrastructure and also make them available to communities in a just and equitable fashion. So these considerations now have inspired new ways of managing water. These new systems often follow this make, use, and return concept, which is embedded in design and engineering and planning and implementation of regenerative systems. We tend to use less. And when we use water and resources and produce waste, we recover resources from waste and try to reuse that and recycle the water. This concept of regenerative systems, using an integrated approach to water management, is gaining traction and is the concept that is embedded in this paradigm that we refer to as the One Water paradigm. But as Jennifer mentioned, this paradigm has been referred to as integrated water management, integrated water resource management, integrated urban water systems, and many, many other terms that have been discussed over the course of past two decades. But it's gaining more momentum because now addressing the challenges that we are confronted with require a very close integration of our water systems. So these integrated approaches tend to facilitate a transition from segmented management of our water system to a more integrated approach. Some of you may have seen this illustration that nicely demonstrates the historical and future water management regimes going from a water supply city to a more interconnected, equitable, and resilient water paradigm. You can see in the bottom service delivery functions that are facilitated by these water management concepts, and then socio-political drivers that motivate adoption and then planning and implementation of the system. So you can see water supply city, sewer city, drain city. And then, again, as I said, recently over the course of past two decades, we've achieved pretty good stormwater and healthy waterway kind of conditions. At least we know how to do these kind of things. And now we're at the point that this holistic approach to managing the urban water cycle or water cycle in general, and then water-sensitive cities is gaining popularity and importance. So this one water transition or transitions that are embedded in the one water paradigm, when you go to literature, you see many, many aspects to this. The way that I organize these topics in my discussions and in the way that we approach the problems are centered around three pillars that we consider as the essential components of the one water transition. One, obviously, is integration. Integration of drinking water, stormwater, wastewater, and recycled water systems in a way that all urban water flows are considered as a part of our management and planning. The second aspect is transitioning from the viewpoint of provisioning services, taking water from point A to point B in the most cost-effective fashion, to a resource management paradigm. When we look at water as a vital resource that we want to protect it, we want to improve the condition, that underlines water systems. And therefore, keeping the natural capital of cities intact and sustaining the ecological integrity of our urban regions and our communities in general. And the third pillar is resiliency pillar, meaning that we now know that climatic extremes are disturbing not only water systems, but communities in general, such that we need to stay agile, proactive in understanding these changes and designing systems that allow coping with these shifts or shocks to our system in a much more flexible and also agile fashion, meaning that if there are shocks, we can absorb these shocks and recover from these shocks in a much more robust and reliable fashion. So these are the three pillars that I often think about as we characterize our approaches that are categorized under one water transitions. And then many groups have been studying and conducting surveys regarding the one water transition. For example, U.S. Water Alliance is an entity that has done a tremendous amount of work in defining the terminology of water management around the one water concept, and also providing some basic information about what one water means. The hallmarks of one water as defined by the U.S. Water Alliance include a shift in mindset that all water streams in our communities are important and have value, including the waste streams from various activities and land uses in cities. This concept of focusing on projects that culminate in multiple benefits rather than single benefit. Again, you can think about projects that enable us to have access to more reliable drinking water, but also enable us to mitigate heat issues in cities, or allow us to mimic the natural characteristic of a city, for example, for infiltration of water to groundwater in a more robust fashion. The concept of system thinking obviously is very important. If we want to utilize all of water streams in cities and communities, we need to understand the entire system. Watershed scale and river basin scale thinking is also promoted, building partnerships not only among utility managers and water managers and city managers, but also the general public in general is a very important facet of the one water transition. And then social, environmental, and economic justice issues, inclusion, and true engagement of all communities to influence decision-making is another important pillar in the way that U.S. Water Alliance, for example, defines the One Water Roadmap. So you also see many outcomes of this transition from management of water systems in silos and in a fragmented fashion to an integrated management, and going from service provision to resource management, including some of these factors that have been introduced by the Water Research Foundation Blueprint for One Water. Reliable and secure water supply obviously is a very important facet of these issues, and also obviously environmental protection and compliance with what it needs to be put in place to achieve clean water. In the United States, we have the Clean Water Act that essentially defines compliance with different types of regulations for those purposes, flood resilience and protection, resilience to climate change, and ultimately enhancing community health and making our cities more livable is the are among the goals of this shift to a one water paradigm. So among the one water solutions, again, as I said, we are going to a paradigm that is more circular type of and more regenerative type of system to enable that make, use, and return kind of approach, more regenerative approach. You can see in this diagram that we have to think about potable water, reclaimed water, black water, or wastewater, gray water systems. These are, for example, water from dishwashers and things of that sort. Rainwater, harvesting rainwater and stormwater capture. Obviously, river water or raw water, and then groundwater and also systems that promote end-use efficiency are among the types of systems that we may think about. So again, in addition to the traditional portfolio water management systems that were along the traditional paradigm of water management, now we're thinking about building to municipal scale regenerative and resilient systems. So what are the systems? Examples are improving systems that enable water conservation or improve end-use efficiency at building scale, community scale, all the way to municipal scale. And you can think about many uses of water and then how these gains may be achieved by various strategies. Resource recovery and recycling are embedded in many of these regenerative systems. There's a very important concept in one water types of approaches, and that is fit for purpose water, meaning that we use various alternative sources of water, treat those sources to the level that are sufficient for uses. So you can think about treatment for irrigation, treatment of water from various sources for irrigation, landscape irrigation, maybe may require lower levels of treatment than potable water. So this concept of fit-for-purpose use of alternative water sources is also very important in enabling and fostering one water transitions. Nature-based solutions, solutions that enable mimicking the natural characteristics of a location, a place, are important. Among those, some of the most important systems that are discussed as one water approaches are green infrastructure systems such as rain gardens and bioswales and green roofs and so on. Obviously, our green waterways, the areas adjacent to water courses, lakes, and other water bodies are important in making use of these areas for or enabling access to these areas for recreational purposes, or even sometimes for creating areas that are used, for example, as parks within cities. But when we are experiencing extreme events, they can serve as safe to fail regions, meaning that they are parked throughout the year, for example. But if you get a massive precipitation events, they can serve as a temporary storage of flood water, for example. So these concepts of sustainable drainage systems are also very important. And as we discuss incorporation of these regenerative and resilient systems, that often tend to be distributed at many, many locations, incorporation and integration of the systems with the prevailing centralized systems is extremely important. If we want to have a robust and resilient system, we need information about how the systems can be integrated with centralized components, and then we need to understand how they can be operated to improve the resiliency of our water systems. And as we incorporate the systems in our underlying or prevailing water systems, it is really also important to understand the relationship between land use and water. Without a very clear understanding of the relationship between land use and not only the amount of water that we use, but also water quality considerations, air quality considerations, and other factors, our approaches remain siloed and fragmented. So a big part of the one water approach is joining up land use and water planning and management. So you will see in many efforts that are being conducted throughout the United States and other developing countries, this concept of integrated land use and water planning and management are increasingly discussed as a very important factor. Jennifer, I see that you unmuted yourself. Do you have a question?
Well, the slide you're showing is goes to a question I've always had about one water, and that is the slide you're using is kind of an agricultural base demonstration. How does rural and agricultural use of water fit into this concept?
So the focus of the initial sets of factors that I discussed were focused on cities, but this concept of one water is really broader than cities, Jennifer. You will see that so obviously I live in Fort Collins at CSU along this beautiful urban-rural interface in the Front Range of Colorado, and we really want to keep some of these areas intact and in place. So I will provide an example of some of the applications of one water type of approaches and how one water solutions can really influence these interfaces between urban and agricultural communities. When we think about one water, we shouldn't really solely focus on cities. It's the broader concept of integrated water management. And many of the solutions that you see here facilitate keeping that interface vibrant and enabling a rural community that is vibrant also is a big part of that. Now, when we go to areas that are predominantly agricultural systems, some of these concepts may be subject to shortcomings that are rooted in the economy of scale, that we may not have enough justification for promotion of one water solutions. But at least in areas that we have a very robust urban agriculture interface, like what we have in the Front Range of Colorado, these systems tend to be also among most viable solutions to keep agricultural land in place, preserving water to be able to serve agricultural and rural communities. Great question. Hopefully my example I will show at the end of the lecture facilitates some other conversations about it as well. So just again, to go over some of the impetus for some of these type of technologies, such as resource recovery, the U.S. Water Alliance, for example, lists some of these factors. I'm showing here also the battery in New York City, which is an example that many refer to when we talk about resource recovery and reuse. And this resource recovery is not only nutrients, for example, but also sometimes we talk about heat recovery, recovering heat from urban flows and then using that heat as a source of energy. So you can see here factors that promote resource recovery in cities include reducing the demand for potable water, obviously the conservation and providing alternative sources of water will reduce the demand on potable water. These systems tend to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels or demand for fossil fuels, and then subsequently carbon footprints and emission of greenhouse gases. They tend to be highly economically viable to produce nutrients that are recovered from these waste streams. Again, this could be building scale all the way to municipal scale type of systems. And other type of pollutants such as other toxic chemicals or heavy metals are also achieved by these systems. Enhancing stormwater management, as I mentioned, the function of some of the systems is to enable increased infiltration in urban, converting urban impervious surfaces and hardscape to more nature-based type surfaces that promote an improved condition for stormwater management. And then some of these resources can be used for food production and also protecting water systems in the adjacent areas to the systems. So when we think about regenerative systems or this resource recovery and reuse, we want to keep in mind some of these sources of water or alternative sources. These include, again, wastewater, stormwater, gray water, roof runoff, raw water, and potable water. And then applications for various uses, whether they are landscape irrigation or cooling towers, industrial, commercial, and institutional uses, indoor residential uses, including toilet flushing, but sometimes agriculture is a user in many regions in the United States. recycled water is used for agricultural production adjacent to urban centers and adjacent to wastewater treatment plants or recycling plants. And then obviously, ultimately, if we treat the water to drinking water standards, we can use them for potable water uses. In this paradigm, we want to think about the quality of the initial water, the water source, and then the treatment level that is required for the uses that we have in mind. And all of these have costs associated with them, and life cycle costs of the systems or characterization of life cycle costs of the systems is a big and major factor in adoption and promotion of the systems. One other thing that I want to mention that in this paradigm of alternative uses of fit-for-purpose waters is that sensing technologies are also very important in this paradigm. On-site systems that are distributed in space at building to and community scale require sensing technologies that allow us to monitor quality demands and quality of the water, and also some of these machine learning and deep learning approaches that you may have heard that are becoming very important are to be able to control and then optimize operation of these systems. So we're not talking about only physical systems, but also sensing technologies and software solutions that enable this transition to incorporation of decentralized on-site systems that are really important for resilient and regenerative systems. So to show you an example, we've done studies, our group and many other groups have done studies of how much benefits we can gain by incorporating some of these systems for various purposes. So in this, on the left panel, I am showing here on the x-axis the annual amount of reduction of water, residential city water, total municipal water demand for cities of Denver, Miami, and Tucson as a function of the costs of the systems that would enable that much reduction. What, without getting to too much details of what you're seeing here, this is a massive amount of simulations of how the various components of urban water can be managed, how much demand reduction we can achieve by tapping into the sources of water that you can see here for various uses, and also by incorporating end-use efficiency systems that you can see here for, again, potable water, indoor residential, and landscape purposes. So on the left panel, you can see that as we spend more money, obviously, we can achieve more reductions. Up to some of the interesting trends is that Denver and Tucson tend to be very similar in their characteristics and the type of systems that are, from a life cycle assessment point of view, they're economically viable. You can see that up to 30 or 35% reduction in our current water use in these in the region seems to be economically viable. And obviously, since we're talking about technologies that are focused, again, on the quality of receiving water and the level of treatment, then you may have a significant jump in the amount of funds that are required to achieve some certain level of reductions. Seems that in Denver and Tucson, up to 30 to 40% are among viable solutions. And then beyond that, we may have, if we need to achieve more reduction of these or municipal water demands, we may need to have higher levels of funding. And among these solutions, as you can see in the right panel, these efficient irrigation systems tend to be the most socioeconomically viable solution. So what you're seeing here as percentages, this is economic viability, solutions that tend to be on these optimal solutions. And again, as I said, efficient irrigation systems are among the solutions. Indoor conservation tends to be really effective in Tucson to some level in Denver area. But again, as you can see here, because of the type of landscape that we have in Denver, focusing on landscape irrigation and improving our irrigation systems by more efficient and in some cases, advanced irrigation systems tend to be important. Also, you can see that almost in all of the cities, stormwater capture and reuse for irrigation purposes tend to be among the solutions. So what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that looking at the actual functions of these regenerative and resilient systems and looking at their cost in different regions, we may find some solutions that are more economically viable. Now, there are other factors to consider. As I mentioned, there is a complex set of institutions and agreements that govern water management in different regions. In the South Platte River Basin and in general in the American West, we have the prior appropriation doctrine for water, where every drop of water has a user. So if you reduce the amount of water or capture and harvest water from rainwater or stormwater, then you may be influencing the downstream users in agricultural communities or rural communities. All of those factors must be considered when we evaluate these one water type of technologies. So these one water technologies are only viable if they conform with the underlying and prevailing water management approaches and institutions. So these are obviously the context of very complex and important considerations. Jennifer.
Thank you very much, Mazek, because I was going to hop in here. There was this discussion with rain barrels, and now the legislature has allowed you to collect two rain barrels every year. We've shown that that doesn't affect the system. And the gray water systems also had to get legislatively approved, essentially, and those are run mostly by the counties. So I appreciate, Mazdak, you talking about the law.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is really important because this, you know, this new paradigm for design of water systems requires a much more detailed integration of social, economic, and technological aspects of water management. Again, for example, I shared some resources for the One Water LA program. Initially, when they set their goals for 2040, they were talking about 40% reduction or recycling of water. Now they're at a point they've made so much progress that they're actually thinking about 100% use of recycled water. But then you can think about LA River, which is not really a river. It's a man-made canal, and how this effluent dominated system will be influenced if we recycle 100% of the water. So all of these considerations must be incorporated in an integrated fashion because, as I mentioned earlier, I personally love my life in Front Range of Colorado because I can go by the Poudre River that you can see in Jennifer's background. If that river at some segments dries up because we are taking all of the water and recycling it in our cities, then we may influence the ecosystem integrity. And so those are also considered, this concept of leaving enough water in the river to facilitate and foster a healthy ecosystem is obviously a major, major factor in integrated water management. So also, again, I talked about green infrastructure. These systems tend to be very effective in making our communities more livable and healthy. One of the concepts that or issues that is increasingly in the news is urban heat. We know that urban areas, because of the hardscape and urban materials, tend to be up to 10 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than the surrounding suburban areas. So these systems tend to not only increase infiltration and reduce flooding and hopefully contribute to water quality improvements, but also reduce temperature in cities and to some extent have been shown to be also useful for improving air quality. So increasing livability of our cities and healthy communities. They also tend to provide job opportunities. You know, somebody has to maintain these green infrastructure systems, so they could be deemed as, you know, or at least employment opportunities has to be considered. They also reduce municipal expenses if they are carefully designed along with centralized systems and, terms that we use as gray water systems, that pipes and pumps and storage capacities. And then ultimately they can improve safety and security of water resources. So the other thing that I want to highlight in the as we think about one water systems and then how we can incorporate that in our regions, it's really important to also think about what type of how we can assess the progress towards achieving the outcomes or intended goals of the one water transitions. There are many sustainability frameworks that have been developed in characterization or for characterization of urban or city sustainability. I'm listing some of these indices for you, for those of you who are interested, to go to literature and maybe review these topics maybe in more detail. There's a Smart City Index, Sustainable City Index, City Blueprint, and the Envision Infrastructure Rating System that is very, very useful as we think about infrastructure, Effective Utility Management Rating System. And perhaps the index that is most similar to the One Water City concept is the Water Sensitive Cities Index. Many of the aspects of water sensitive cities that is perhaps more adopted or has been adopted in higher rates in Europe and Australia is very similar to the One Water concept. Our group at the One Water Solutions Institute, in collaboration with the Water Research Foundation and several industry partners, we are developing a rating system called One Water Cities Rating System that would allow a consistent and comprehensive approach to the assessment of this one water paradigm. Our rating system is built on this concept of understanding the outcomes that are the desired goals and purpose of one water transitions. I mentioned some of these, but it's really important to understand that these outcomes may be different from city to city, region to region, or even in the same place over time, the desired outcomes and intended goals may change because our conditions change. Then we talked about some of the actions that are important in terms of technologies and also joint planning of water and land use and some institutional agreements. Also, the context is very important. There are reasons that we are making these transitions to this one water paradigm. I mentioned some of these pressures and driving factors, but also some physical factors. You know, every city has a different climatic factors, ecohydrologic factors, particularly microclimatic factors that influence effective solutions. Hydrologic cycles tend to be different in different regions, ecological factors, and then ultimately landscape design, urban form, and land use planning are factors we need to keep in mind. And as Jennifer mentioned, and I hinted to, we must think about policy, instruments, regulations and standards, water laws, and then social capital of the cities. Again, this is not only the management and financial capital, but also literacy and public participation and public education that are important to consider. So here you can see many of these factors that are available from the slides that I have shared with you that describe things to consider on their pathways to achieving one water systems or the one water paradigm, context that motivates or encourages the transitions, and then some of the factors that we discussed under goals and outcomes, ranging from water supply all the way to livability of systems and subcategory of information that you may consider, not only, again, for these are important for research, but from actual pragmatic water management factors that we need to consider. So ultimately, where we are right now, we need to rethink the way water systems are embedded in our cities. And we need a new paradigm in thinking about the systems, planning them, designing them, and implementing them. And as we discussed, system integration is the cornerstone of achieving the goals that we want to reach from the transition to one water. So let me give you a very quick example. I know we're short on time here, but I'll try to be as fast as I can. In the South Platte River Basin that most of you are familiar with, which encompasses the Front Range of Colorado, we not only have our native water in the system originating from pristine Rocky Mountain areas, but we almost get a third of our water from transbasin transfers, including the Colorado Big Thompson system. And the water, obviously, our rivers go through, again, originate from this forested, really beautiful areas in the Rocky Mountain areas, passes through our urban regions, and then agricultural water. We know population in the region is extremely, it's growing very fast, and it's very important to consider the population growth that is anticipated in our region. We almost are thinking about doubling of the population by 2050. Tremendous amount of increasing the demand for resources, including water. Also, we know our temperatures are increasing. Precipitation regimes are changing too. Water yield is changing, but there is less consistency in the projected changes in precipitation. What we can tell with a very high level of confidence is that temperature is going to increase, and that's going to influence the demand for water in the agricultural sector as well as municipal and industrial sectors. So how do we balance the increasing demand and potentially diminishing supply of water in our system? So, of course, one water systems may be a part of the portfolio of solutions. If we historically look at the water rights in our systems, you can see that municipal sector has been obtaining a lot of surface water rights, whether they're direct water rights from our rivers or particularly storage water rights from reservoirs. Municipalities are acquiring a lot of water. And this transfer of water from agriculture to urban, you can see, has resulted in a significant decline in irrigated agricultural land in the Front Range of Colorado in the South Platte River Basin. And our models that we have developed for the system project that by 2060, almost all of the water will be transferred from agricultural land. Now, how do we cope with that? Typically, cities go obtain these water from agricultural areas through a process called buy and dry, buying agricultural land and drying them and then using the water to promote urban activities. And then you can see that potential diminishing of the water supply and increasing water demand by about 2050 put us in a very tenuous situation that we have to make hard decisions. As a matter of fact, some of the projections in the Colorado's water plan confirm our modeling approaches. Of course, a lot of these projections are also subject to uncertainty, that we have significant gap in our water supply. And about 20 to 30% of our ag land in the South Platte River Basin will be lost because of the competition for water. So when Jennifer was talking about what does it mean for agricultural areas, we've done studies that show some of these urban water conservation and regenerative systems can actually help significantly to keep irrigated agricultural land in place in our place. The reason for this is that if we reduce demand and regenerate and recover water in urban settings and recycle and reuse them, then we can leave more water, raw water, fresh water in the system for downstream users, particularly for the agricultural users. And our socioeconomic analysis shows that without any action, the value of water rights itself, just simply selling water, outweighs the value of the crops that are produced in agricultural farms. By adopting some of these solutions, we can keep the value of our crop production systems in place and also some of the water that is needed for those crop production systems. And among the portfolio of solutions that tend to be most effective are urban water conservation and demand reduction systems, and then irrigated cropland, sprinkler systems, and other type of irrigation systems, and then adding supply. The concept of supply is very important to think about is because we know that if you don't have water, you can't store it. So adding storage to system is not always a solution. In our system, I just want for us to think about, it's not only water. It's really important to think about in a much more integrated fashion. Our population is growing and the population is going to cities. And if you think about by 2050, the population growth that we're projecting, it's really also important to think that about 40 to 45% of our homes in the Front Range of Colorado have not been built yet. So if we want to do something, this is the time to think about the new generation of water systems that are informed by land use planning and also inform growth in our cities. The way we grow must be informed by these factors. And I'm delighted that Denver, for example, has started this One Water Plan that looks at some of these important factors in One Water management that includes promoting institutional collaborations, implementing multi-benefit projects, community support, resiliency, and then integrated water management. So Denver has started this process. This plan is available for public review. I highly encourage those of you who live in this place to study this. I shared the materials that you can obtain from the resources that Jennifer has provided to the class. And you can see here for each of these goals, we've helped the group to develop a set of indicators to monitor the progress towards achieving these goals and implementing strategies. For example, for urban livability, you can look at how much green spaces are available for a population by census tract. So we have a set of metrics that enable characterization of these various indicators for one water characterization. Again, it's really important to think about these approaches as we invest in the new generation of infrastructure in our cities. And I leave this slide as the last slide for our conversation that to implement these factors, there are key elements that need to be put in place. We discussed a lot of those, but also I want to highlight not only regulation and legislation, but the fact that we need bold leadership to rethink and reimagine. We need new generations of leaders, planners, and managers that can take a little bit of risk because they have the capacity to understand the system, incorporate various factors in the decision-making process, and hopefully enable the shift toward this integrated approach that in this concept we are calling One Water Paradigm Shift. Again, I thank you for giving me this opportunity to give this lecture. Hopefully we have some time for discussions, but Jennifer, please let me know if there's any question that I can answer.
If you're okay with sticking around a little bit, that would be great. One comment I have is last year at the seminar, we had the head of Denver Water, Jim Lockhead, talk about their plan and the building, the new building, office building that they have. And what interested me, you know, we talked about rain barrels and those used to be illegal and now they're legal to up to 255-gallon rain barrels. However, Denver Water filed for a water right.
Yes.
For the water that's going to be falling on their roof.
Yeah, so Denver Water has they are really implementing the One Water campus, the One Water concept in their campus and demonstrating some of these technologies. It's also, Jennifer, important to point out the Spur campus in National Western Center, where we are demonstrating many of these technologies that are being put in place. So obviously, this is a new concept. Although, again, we've been talking about integrated water management, but now we are really driven to put these systems in place. So research and development in this paradigm shift is very important. So the leadership that Denver Water has demonstrated, some of the efforts that we are pursuing at Colorado State University, at the National Western Center, at the Spur campus also is very important to demonstrate and illustrate how the systems can be designed and implemented at community level.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning Spur too. Yeah. Dixie, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
So we talked about improving public participation and also having like improving social capital with having citizens actually be engaged. But how do we actually assess that and measure that?
Great question. So I can, Dixie, I can tell you from the One Water, Denver One Water plan that there are two key aspects that folks are looking at. One is just simply engagement, events, different type of engagement vehicles via social media, meetings, and those aspects to increase interaction, not only with, again, water managers and institutions, but also with the general public, including students, K-12 or higher education students. And then the Denver One Water team, leadership team, they call them One Water Leaders or OWL team. They conduct an annual survey of mindset or citizen mindsets and literacy about One Water concepts. So they're thinking about how to increase engagement using various vehicles and then conducting surveys to see whether those communication strategies are effective in increasing literacy about water issues and the importance of this integrated approach to water management.
Great question, Dixie. Anyone else?
I had a question.
Go ahead, Gabriel.
I'm wondering if you have any opinion or if there's any sort of calculations that have been done or evidence out there that in terms of green infrastructure, is there one method that's kind of like best bang for your buck? Is it like green roofs? Is it rain gardens, permeable pavements? Do you have any sort of idea of what the most effective way to make the most strategy?
Sure. Great question, Gabriel. This concept of how do we select and design green infrastructure systems depending on the context, the location, the urban setting we're talking about is also a very important discussion. There's no unique solution. There is no unique answer. Like rain gardens are better than green roofs or they are better than, you know, these other types of permeable pavements or so on. However, there are very rigorous approaches to evaluation and assessment of these systems without, you know, promoting too many of our own tools. We have a system called, or a tool called CLASIC, Community Enabled Life Cycle Assessment Tool. It's a web tool free for everybody to use that enables assessing the performance, hydrologic water quality, and co-benefits, which includes air quality, employment opportunity, heat mitigation, many of the co-benefits of green infrastructure at various scales. So although there is no unique solution, there are assessment capacities, including data analysis and modeling capacities that would enable you to answer those questions. Again, this the answer will depend on availability of space, value of the land that we are talking about. We know that land that is closer to downtown areas is more expensive, highly correlated with impervious surfaces, as a matter of fact, and many other factors. So I can send more information about the CLASIC tool, Jennifer, if you want to post that so Gabriel can study. But there are some tools to be able to document and quantify some of these effects.
I think that would be great. If you send it to me, I'll post it on Canvas and the website. So, Jan, you had a question.
Yes, thank you for this presentation. This was very informative, and I really like the project, the intent behind it. So I was wondering what kind of jobs help with this program, and if it's like city involvement or if there are private industry involvement in this as well. If you could speak on that a little bit.
Yeah, Jen, this is another great question. Many of the cities that I work with and I've studied, they tend to be a little bit of larger cities at this point. They are pioneers in adopting this. They are putting water institutions and departments and groups together. So just a couple of weeks ago, City of Miami-Dade, actually, they created new position on one water approaches. So they have now a person that is in charge of that. There are a lot of private sector companies that help utilities and cities to do the analysis and assessment and put the plans together. For example, the Denver One Water Plan was led or facilitated by a company called Corolla Engineers. So there are many job opportunities, both in the public sector, where you are thinking about integration of one water systems. Again, I can think about LA, which was probably one of the very earliest adopter of this concept. New York City, Denver, Miami, Tucson, a lot of cities are thinking about that. So you have public sector opportunities for that. Even Fort Collins, I know many folks at the Fort Collins utilities think about one water and have been looking for people who can think that way. And also in private sector, engineers, planners, people from natural sciences that can think about these complex sets of interactions between institutions, social factors, and technological aspects. So again, I work with many of them because this is what my group does. But this is a growing field. Groups that can manage and handle green infrastructure systems, again, and some of these other type of one water systems. It's an increasingly important factor, and I think jobs will be even more and more upcoming in this field and this paradigm.
Thank you.
Good question, Jan. We should ask that for every speaker we have. Anyone else? Well, we've gone a little bit over. Dixie, you got another one. Go.
Okay, so we talked about having kind of a secondary sensor system, but I guess when is that worth investing in if we can't keep up with our aging infrastructure, like replacing pipes already? Like, do we just look at the budget available for the infrastructure and take a gamble on where to place a certain amount of sensors and hope that there's a good payoff?
So sensing technology is a part of that, Dixie. Again, another fantastic question. If you're a city manager, you respond to many different people, whether they're political appointments or city managers and things like that. So you have to think about costs, right? Can I justify and keep this type of solutions going? So let me give you two examples. One is in city of Portland. Portland had substantial water pollution issues. These are well documented, and they had water quality consents around combined sewer overflows. Combined sewer overflows are areas where sewer collection system includes wastewater as well as stormwater. So you can imagine when you get huge amount of rain, you may get issues with overflowing systems and cause substantial water quality issues. So Portland was investing in or had to invest in revitalizing and improving their collection system. And they were thinking about either building a huge pipe that collects this water or combining these are called gray solutions or more traditional engineer solutions, or combining them with some green elements. That's why I was talking about hybrid systems, combining green and gray solutions. So they figured out actually by adding green components, rain gardens in particular, they could infiltrate enough of the stormwater that would reduce the size of their gray pipes substantially, and not only make the downtown area and other areas in Portland more livable, but reduce the cost of their compliance with water quality regulations, right? So in many cases, people argue that by adopting these type of solutions, not only you achieve multiple purposes, but also you reduce costs. But it has to be analyzed. Again, there is no single answer that you can apply to all circumstances. But it appears from evidences throughout the country, in the United States and other developing countries, combining these type of one-water systems with more centralized components tend to be best solutions or most economically and socially viable solutions. The other example that I highlight for you to study, since we don't have enough time, is the Green City Blue Waters Program in the city of Philadelphia. They are the leaders in considerations regarding implementation of green infrastructure systems. They've achieved a lot of their compliance for water quality purposes by adopting green solutions while tackling some of these other challenges that I discussed in terms of multiple benefit in the cities. So one of the programs that I always highlight is the Green City Blue Water Program in that Philadelphia Water Department is doing.
I see some great ideas for final papers here. We've dwindled down our group here. So, Mazdak, thank you again so much for doing this. Thanks to you all who kind of hung out and stayed with us. Yes, very good.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity, Jennifer.
Great. Thank you so much. And have a good evening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Take care.
Thank you.